right on. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again. This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 509. I'm Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my co-host, Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
And intern, Rebecca Melanson.
Hello, hello.
Oui, como no. You're listening to us on KOOP, Hornsby, KOOP HD1, HD3, Hornsby. We also stream this puppy live at KOOP.org. Don't you go away.
Hurry, hurry, and step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
It is Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. On the show today, we have the folks at the Vortex and their show, The Last, or not The Last, Last, an Extinction Comedy. Also, later on the show, we'll have Penfold Theater Company talking about Crime and Punishment. And, of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, New Orleans, and Dallas, Texas. Please stay with us. My girl. Talking about my girl. That was the original tune. A lot of people don't know that. Hey, Nicole, why don't you put that microphone next to your mouth and join the party?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to sing My Girl.
Well, you should have.
I'm off key right now.
Like
I was singing away from the microphone on purpose.
Sing along when I sing. Okay. Hey, checking in with Nicole Shiro.
I'm here.
Okay, good for
I'm
you.
I'm enjoying the weather.
Yeah, the weather's nice.
And that is lovely. And the blue bonnets and the Indian paper. It's not just the blue bonnets this year. Man, our Texas wildflowers have been absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Lady Bird Johnson.
Beautiful.
That's all I have to say is thank you, Lady Bird Johnson. Rebecca Melanson.
Yes, ma'am.
Comment allez-vous? That's French.
Okay, you lost me on that one.
How you doing?
I'm fantastic.
I'm giving you the reprieve today, so you're gonna observe, and I'm not putting you to work this day.
I'm observing. I'm watching the master at work.
Yeah. Well, I ain't too proud about that. But before I get into that, groan. I would like to thank Kim Simpson, another wonderful international folk bazaar. Who here loves accordion music?
I do.
Yeah.
Legitimately, who doesn't? Actually do like that stuff.
I find the instrument itself very intriguing.
I love it. And, both you and I lived in Chicago. Anybody else here ever live in Chicago? Accordion capital of the world, polka capital of the world.
It's the Polish.
I guess not of the world, but
I mean, I lived in San Antonio, and we do.
Right into the microphone there,
Eva. I lived in San Antonio. I'm from San Antonio. We did an accordion pretty darn good, the mariachi.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah. I'm from deep south Texas, and the accordion is a big,
okay.
big hit.
Okay, so, all right. So I'm thinking polka. Accordion, but you are right, and you are right. Both of you are correct.
I was like, there's Spanish polka,
okay.
But and Czechoslovakian polka here, but it's more of the Polish polka in Chicago. And
you know what's funny?
It's a Polish polka party up there for sure, like it is with the blues. It's that.
Like, I oftentimes wear polka dots.
Nice transition.
All right, let's.
Wonderful
segue. Waiting all show
let's
to say
introduce
that,
the folk. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Nathan.
You were waiting all show to say that.
Yes,
you?
I was. So, speaking of that, let's introduce the folks that are here. Nathan Jerkins, hello.
Hello.
Ryan Crowder, hello.
Hi.
Eva McQuaid, buenos dias.
Et bonjour aussi.
Oh, bonjour aussi. Trey Deason, I'm trying to do it in German, but I can't.
Oh, I'm Scandinavian. So no,
actually, it was purely by coincidence that I used Spanish to have nothing to do with her own heritage.
That was so awesome.
I don't speak Norwegian.
Ben Bazan.
Hello.
Comment allez-vous? And Rudy Ramirez, welcome back.
Hello.
Bienvenido back. Oh, my God. So I ain't too proud about all that either, speaking of which. Ain't Too Proud opened up on the Great White Way this week.
Yes, yes.
Two pretty good reviews, by and large. Not super duper raves.
Like out of the park raves, but they weren't like bombers.
Although
for sure.
Ben Brantley, I think it was Ben that reviewed it, did make it a critic's pick in the New York Times. The failing New York Times. But this is directed by Des Makanoff and choreography by Sergio Trujillo, who also...
Well, you said that pretty easily, actually.
Well, if they're hard, I can do it. It's the easy ones I have trouble with, like Melanson. Des Makanoff and Sergio Trujillo were the pair that did... Eva, you're looking at me like I'm butchering that name, am I?
No, okay. I was having my own internal dialogue.
Yeah, you got to be right into that microphone.
Yeah, I was just thinking about life.
Okay.
She was being inappropriate
I was being inappropriate, so that's why I wasn't right on the mic.
About when something is hard to say.
Oh, okay, got it. got it. Anyway, Des Makanoff and Sergio Trujillo are the geniuses behind, what's the other one?
Jersey Boys.
Jersey Boys, thank you. And this is likened to Jersey Boys. It's basically the same formula.
Yeah. And set up.
But it didn't dawn on me when I was reading this, until I read this, that, and I swear, and maybe you guys can correct me, but Mamma Mia, was there a jukebox musical before Mamma Mia in 2001? I don't think there was. Can't think of one.
I'm going to say yes, there has to be.
Well, I mean, he goes on to talk about how since Mamma Mia, and I started to think...
I would say that's like the big one that took the
world. It did.
It zwooshed it.
There was a lot of zwooshing going on.
But was it really? I don't know if it was the first.
I don't know. So one of the things that the Temptations does, and I actually worked with the Temps. I did the Temps and the Tops.
Oh, that's kind of
for
cool.
An industrial show I did. They're very, very, very nice people. And they came in, and I don't know whether it was the Tops or the Temps, but one of them, and that's the Four Tops and the Temptations, one of them came in, they had no support. They were like carrying, they were their own roadies. It was really kind of sad. That was the end of the story. But they were talking about how the Temptations has, you know, a rolling list of players, and it took a while to get the five that would end up being their...
There's only one actual Temptation.
Otis Williams.
Yes, that has been like throughout the whole ride. Mm-hmm. There was an amazing piece. There's been a lot of press around it, but there was a really great interview and piece on this particular show on CBS Sunday morning 2 weeks ago. And maybe we can find it and share it. It was a really great interview and with not just Otis, but with the creators, with the cast.
With the actual
putting
Otis.
It together. Yes. Uh-huh. And it was really just fascinating. And him laughing about this becoming a musical, he's like, never thought I'd saw this in a lifetime. And it was just really interesting. And the amount of physicality that these gentlemen, the real Temptations,
besides
the actors, the physicality of what they do.
So they talk about, so usually when you see the Temptations, their choreography is all the same. And I love the line in here, and I don't think I marked it, but he said, talked about how this choreography is all very the same, yet each character has their own unique way. They're the same, but different in the bestest of ways, they said. There it is. Especially this is true. The sinuous synchronicity of Mr. Trujillo's choreography, in which everyone is often doing the same moves, but with a subtle stylus edge that sets each member apart. Ding, you thought I didn't remember what I wrote or read. But anyway, it sounds good. Some of the other critics, my dear friend Charles Isherwood said, quote, and this is in parentheses, perhaps it's time to unplug that jukebox metaphor into the 21st century and call them Pandora or Spotify musicals. In paren, the show coasts along on a surging energy of its more than 30 songs, but rarely raises the proverbial roof. So he wasn't a big fan, but it sounded like he liked it. Joe Dominowitz from the New York Post said a big plus is Sergio Trujillo's choreography with its dazzling spins and splits and piston precise steps. Variety's Frank Rizzo said, but polished performances, slick choreography, and a slate of 31 Motown tunes should satisfy audiences who might not be looking for a probing storytelling as long as the show delivers well-performed hits. That it does. And finally, Sarah Holdren of Vulture said, Ain't Too Proud is certainly beautiful to look at. The show often sounds great, too, but underneath its sparkle is theater monotony.
When I watch a piece, I was like, look, if I'm going to go to that, I'm going for the catalog of the Temptations music. Yeah. And so if you're going to give me good music, I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm not going in to see riveting work.
Which is what everybody says about it. And everybody yeah. loved it. Although I do have to say that I saw the first time I saw Jersey Boys, I saw it on the road here. I was not expecting to love it as much as I did.
I do love me some Jersey Boys, too. I know.
Anybody else see Jersey Boys?
No.
Sure.
No? No? Yeah. Eva said, sure. Sure, of course. I love it. It's a, yeah. Okay. So another show opened at the Public.
Okay. Yeah.
But this is Susan Laurie Parks, who I we'll take a quiz here. Do we pronounce her Susan Laurie Parks or Suzanne Laurie Parks?
Susan.
I always heard it Susan too, but a podcast I listen to quite religiously always calls her Suzanne, and I yell at the podcast. Stuff.
I would yell at him too because yeah, when I met her, she introduced herself as Susan Laurie Parks.
So that was her way of saying, I've met Susan Laurie Parks.
No,
rock
I'm just
on.
Saying. I'm
okay,
just,
that's cool. That is absolutely really cool. I did not know that.
She has a lot of ties here in Austin.
Did not
used
know.
To do a lot of work here. Yes.
Did not know.
Yes. She worked on the 365, 368 days plays here in Austin.
Okay.
She's originated some work at Zach. She used to be married to Paul Osher, who lives here, who is the Muddy Waters harmonica player.
Yeah.
But damn, and there are your fun facts for Susan Laurie Parks of the day.
Tune in next week where we highlight a different playwright. Right off the bat, there's a word that I'm going to quiz everybody to see if they know. So the very first sentence of this review written by Ben Brantley says, even its title vibrates vertiginously with layers of meaning. Vertiginously. Come on, you smart
people.
Are you
pronouncing it correctly?
I'll tell you in just a second, but try it.
I thought you may have had the sound cue queued up.
I did not cue it up,
but
here it is.
Failed, sorry.
Wait, maybe not. It's not letting me press the button. Anybody? Vertiginous?
So precarious at a high height?
No, but thank you for playing. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Actually, sort of.
In some way related to vertigo
yes,
and falling.
That's why I said it's sort of the same thing.
And all of that.
It's whirling, spinning rotary.
Okay.
But yes, good. You both win. You lost first.
Good
and then
job,
you
Rhodey.
Well and done. You win applause. That's what we have here.
It's
applause
what we all
and admiration for Rhodey and Nathan.
So, of course, the show I'm talking about is White Noise. Which is a triple or quadruple entendre of things. It sort of deals with racism, but also deals with that the noise that blares out everything else, and also deals exactly with the white noise machine that we use to fall asleep with.
Or the ghosts talk to us through.
Or the ghosts talk to us through. It stars, among others, David Diggs, who we just love. It basically centers around two couples that were four lifelong friends. And evidently, there are two couples that were together, two heterosexual couples, I should say. Men and women were together younger times, and then they switched and got married. And each of them is a mixed race couple, a white person and an African-American person. It's directed by Oscar Eustace. It sounds fascinating.
Yeah, we talked about it once when you were out of town when they started rehearsals and had cool stuff, and I've been excited and interested and curious.
So what I love about this, we talk about
theater. Lisa.
We talk about Rocky Das Musical.
We love Rocky Das Musical.
What does
Musical.
Rocky Das Musical have in it?
A full-size regulation boxing ring. Did you know that the rights are now available to Rocky Das Musical as of 2 weeks ago?
Did you know that White Noise has a bowling alley on the set?
I know.
And according to this picture, which I'll show everybody, it looks like they actually play. There's a picture
Please.
Of
yeah, they do.
Exactly. There's a picture of David Diggs right after he throws the ball. The ball is in midair, so I'm wondering if it's a real bowling ball because those
I was about to say
move fast and hard.
When I saw some of the pictures and saw some of that, I wondered myself, Lisa.
So this is interesting. So David Diggs has he's an artist. He has insomnia. He buys his white noise machine. It works like a charm. He sleeps well. and then can't write anymore.
It's kind of, I was like, well, that's just so simplistic and easy, but such a great plot line at the same time.
But they decide to, there was a, I forgot how they do this. I've got to read it again. But the David Diggs character, Leo, decides to sell himself to the other character for $89,000 as a slave for a political statement. Let's see, it says, it's a way for Leo to explore his heritage and his anger and a means of showing the world how far we've not come. So it sounds like a very interesting
show. It fascinates. Everything I read about it fascinates me. And I read something new and I'm like, that's not what I've learned before.
Evidently, David Diggs does a decent job.
I was like, he's good?
Yeah.
Shocking.
I think if he works hard,
he might go somewhere. We're rooting for you, David.
Ben Brantley says, in a breakout performance as dramatic star, Mr. Diggs shows an aching emotional openness here that conveys the harsh and heavy price of staying awake in the world of the self-anesthetized. Say that three times. This is something I would like to see. This is something I would like to produce. This is something I would like to see produced here in Austin when it comes out.
I'm trying to figure out if I can convince a bowling alley to let me produce it in the bowling alley.
In the bowling alley.
Yeah, I'd say yes. As long as you wear those crazy shoes, it doesn't screw up their lanes.
All the audience members have to check their shoes at the door. It'll be interactive. Yeah.
So cool. This is an interesting thing, and I have to say, even after reading the article, I don't quite understand the details of it. But when we're talking about Hamilton, the headline
was.
That's
pretty funny that you just said after reading the article, I don't quite understand. It was a very thought provoking article.
It was filled with legalese, and I don't get it really.
Okay,
but the crux of it is. After the Supreme Court hears a specific case called, I forgot what the name of the case is.
But they're saying
white actors could sue Hamilton for discrimination for not hiring white actors in the roles of, like, for instance, George Washington. And all the main founding fathers are played by people of color, and by design, by creative design, it's meant to be that way. So they're saying that if this particular Supreme Court things goes through, that that they could be sued for discrimination. And I want to open this up to discussion in general, but in my personal opinion, first of all, no, you shouldn't. You know, that's the conceit of the piece and that's a really important part of the piece. But I also think there's a difference. Just take Hamilton out of it. But there's a difference between a white person suing for discrimination and a person of color suing for discrimination. White people, I don't think, can sue for discrimination because we have reaped all the benefits of privilege for hundreds of years.
That's like reverse racism, that whole...
Yeah, that's what my thing is. Reverse racism Hamilton is my landline.
I don't get... Yeah.
Yeah, so...
It just makes me want to sing, you know, how many seas must a white dove sail before she lays in the sand? Yeah, I don't know
she
why.
She sleeps in the sand, but laying
that
sounds better.
For me. I don't know.
So, yeah. So, sleep, first of all... As we're all theater makers, I think it's important that we maintain the authors, the playwright's intent. And in the Hamilton case, it's that way. But it would be, and this all goes to all the stuff that's been happening around Miss Saigon and white actors being cast in as Asians, as black people, as all things that we shouldn't be cast in.
Well, the Miss Saigon Michiganess was almost 20 years ago.
No, that was just a recent one. There was
it
a new
happened
one.
Again?
There was a new
I
one.
I was
yeah.
like, I know the Jonathan Pryce stuff.
No, that was there was just a recent one, and we talked about it here on the show. But anyway, does anybody disagree that Hamilton has the right to hire people of color in roles? Even though historically they weren't people of color, so we think.
Yeah, but I think anybody, not just Hamilton, has the right to cast.
Right.
Color, non-color, whatever. Like,
well, we're talking specifically about Hamilton.
But I think in any role that isn't specifically written that way, I think what makes
Hamilton unique is that historically the characters were not people of color. And the creative conceit around Hamilton is that they are people of color and they're immigrants. Anybody? All right. Okay, good. We all agree. We can move on. Let's talk about demographics. You sent me this article.
Did you find the numbers interesting?
I didn't find them surprising. So this is an article that talks about the demographics of people that come to see the Broadway tours. Interestingly, so there were in the 2017-2018 Broadway tours across North America had 17 million admissions. By the way, here's an interesting thing. This I found interesting. So road theaters, like in our case, Bass Concert Hall, which houses Broadway across America. How many of those generally do you think there are around the country? Okay. These are shows outside of New York that show national tours.
72.
Anybody else?
I'll go 100.
100. Okay. Well, if we were guessing closest without going over, Eva would win. If we were guessing closest, Nathan would win. It is 99. I thought there'd be more. Yeah. So these are things that didn't surprise me. 72% of the audiences were female. Which is 10% higher than Broadway audiences.
That's what I thought was interesting, is that it was 10% higher than Broadway. I was like, really?
Let's see. Here's a spoiler.
Yeah, and the funny bold after it is pretty funny, if I believe it.
Oh, true.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead. You say it.
The vast majority of touring Broadway theater goers were Caucasian. And then in bold, they write, "No surprise here, but increasingly unfortunate." 25 and over, 81% had a college degree and 38% had a graduate degree. And I thought the subscriptions were going to be higher. 39% of respondents subscribed to the actual Broadway series at their venue.
Yeah.
And most touring Broadway attendees would see up to 5 tours a year, which I actually thought that was a higher number. Considering there's only 6 to 7 on a season, they're averaging 5.
That's here in this town. I mean,
that's the average. This isn't just Austin.
About, you said there's usually only 6 a season, but other cities have more in a season.
6 to 7. Most of them are six to seven. Yeah.
All right. But you would know better than I.
Yeah. Houston gets the A versus B market. They get like 1 or 2 more maybe and have an additional add on. But we get an add on.
So it's an interesting thing. You can click to it on our website. Almost 75% of the audience uses Facebook regularly. And I'm assuming it's Facebook. It says FB.
Yes.
It could be Funny Bone. It could be Future Bravo.
Could be a lot of
Here were two things that I thought was cool. 63% said an incentive would encourage them to attend more frequently. From discounts to a special perk. It doesn't just have to be money. I was like, wow, that's a big amount. And more than half of the audience said they were involved or interested in theater as a child. And then in bold, they have ding, ding, because I love my arts education.
There were not little music notes next to the ding, ding. It just said ding, ding.
Ding.
So I just want to be very, very clear about that. So I'm going to move on, if I may.
Yeah, you may.
Because we're running out of time. There's a musical that is going to be playing in Farmers Branch, a suburb of Dallas, called at the Firehouse Theater. It is going to play May 3rd through May 5th. So, 2 days? 3 days. And it is called, it's a musical.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oswald.
Dun, dun, dun.
About Lee Harvey.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
I find this very interesting.
Would you like to talk to them about it? Because I know those folks. The Firehouse.
Yeah, no, I don't.
Lee Harvey Oswald Foundation.
No, I don't know Lee Harvey. Okay. Didn't know him back then either.
So there are 27 musical numbers in it. It's done from the perspective of the widow, Marina Porter, who still lives in the Dallas area. Mm-hmm. She's 77 years old.
That must be an interesting life to lead.
Yeah. The music is written by Josh Sassanella, whose credits include Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, Rock of Ages. And then Tony LePage wrote the book for Oswald. And I guess LePage is more of an actor, a performer, was in Come From Away and also Rock of Ages. And the music is supervised by Kimberly Grigsby from To Kill a Mockingbird, Head Over Heels, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark, Spring Awakening, and The Full Monty. I don't know. Interesting.
That's a very eclectic group of musicals you just read by that woman's name. Yeah.
They're saying that it is Broadway bound, but I don't know. I just don't know.
It's interesting.
And then the last thing I need to talk to you about before we take a break is Next to Normal. There was a concert performance of Next to Normal. Did you see this, Nicole?
I did see some of this.
They announced the cast of this the day of the concert.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, it was already sold out. It was a fundraiser for Roundabout. Am I right? Is it Roundabout?
I think it was Roundabout.
But it, again, they announced the cast the day of the show, but it was the full original cast of Next to Normal. Alice Ripley, Aaron Trevay, and all that.
I was just like, really? What a great group of folks.
Yep. As well as Alice Ripley and Aaron Trevay, there's J. Robert Spencer, Jennifer Damiano.
Who's Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark? You want to keep getting the Spider-Man in there?
Adam Chandler Barat and Lewis Hobson.
But let's just go back and talk about Alice Ripley and Aaron Trevay.
There you go.
Yeah.
So we will hear a little bit of Aaron Trevay.
Love him.
As we go to break. As soon as I remember which CD player I'm playing out of, I think it's this one.
He's Moulin Rouge in it these days.
We'll see. Moulin Rouge is supposed to be good. Okay, we'll be right back. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
And
Rebecca Melanson.
Hello.
Bonjour.
Oui, oui, oui. Bonjour, bonjour.
Rebecca, you had a birthday celebration, didn't you?
I did. And
we would say bon anniversaire.
Bon anniversaire. And I believe you you shared with me that you made something special. New Orleans-y.
I did.
What was it?
I'm from New Orleans.
I knew.
Turkey sausage gumbo and crawfish pie.
Crawfish pie. That was my sorority name in college. So, you know, we just don't get enough extinction comedies these days, do we?
Wonderful segue.
Yep. And the Vortex is going to fill that need, quench that thirst. And here from the Vortex, we have the director of the show, Rudy Ramirez.
Hello.
Hi, Rudy. And we have actors, Ben Bazan.
Hello.
Trey Deason.
Hello.
And Evan McQuaid.
Hello.
So this is, I just love how it's billed, and I didn't bring the paper so I can't cheat, but there's improv, there's sketch, there's all sorts of stuff in here.
It's a smorgasbord of a delightful evening. Tell us, Rudy.
Yeah, this is I think the wildest piece I've ever put on stage.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
That says a lot from you.
That does
really
say a lot.
I became obsessed with extinction about like 3 years ago or so, and
with the idea of extinction,
because we're in one, like it is, it's happening, and so. But as I started reading and finding these stories, I'm like, some of these are really funny, and so I kind of started to get this idea in my head of like a show that would be like sketch comedy about extinction, and then I kind of started thinking about like, what about the last roaming sketch comedians wandering the wasteland as humanity dies out? And so then I got together a bunch of people who I love, like people who are here.
Yes.
And Sarah Marie Curry, who I brought in.
Sarah Marie Curry,
who I adore. She said, well, sketch is so structured and it's so scripted and it's so precise. What if to offset that, the other scenes are beatprov scenes where we say, we know that these three or four things have to happen in this scene, but otherwise, go for it and see how it goes. So we've been building this show out of sketch and devising and improv, and so it is different every night, which for a scripted director is terrifying, but
I guess.
It's also amazing to watch them do it.
How much fun is that? So I'm going to take a quick little leap to the right, and during the break we asked Ben to come up with a number between 1 and 2 and 50. What did you choose?
36.
All right, let's hear what 36 is.
Hello, this is Aunt Pearl from Tuna, Texas, and you're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby, Austin, 91.7. You can't breathe tomorrow's air till you tune in.
There you go.
That was a good one. We haven't heard Aunt Pearl in a while.
That's perfect. So tell us, let's go start with Ben. What do each of you have your own character?
Yes. So I am the character Tlacuache, because throughout
I was going to guess that.
Yeah, which is Spanish for possum. And my role as part of this sketch group is to be the costume designer and the person that's in charge of, you know, making alterations and making sure everybody's dressed for their sketches. Yep.
So let me ask you this. I'm assuming that this troupe of actors launches into the beat prov, as you call it. Mm-hmm. When you do that, do you participate in the improv as well?
Yes, I do. So every one of us has, you know, a group scene or a scene with three people. And like Rudy mentioned, which is a group, exactly. A trio. Trio versus group scenes, meaning, you know, there are 10 of us on stage at one point. So
I'm
sometimes.
With you.
See, Lisa, get it.
I'm with you.
Sometimes, you know.
I've taken improv.
It's a little chaotic.
yes, and.
But no, I do participate in that. And a lot of my. You know, experience within the last couple of years was doing a bunch of improv shows that had certain beats, but every night it was different. So this has been a fun treat to get to, you know, use that improv training with a group of actors that, you know, I've never improvised with before.
Awesome. Trey, tell us about your character.
Well, I play Alley Cat, who is my favorite animal. And
Alley Cat, I'm assuming, is the name of is your name, and you're a human.
It is, yes. We are all humans. We're all playing humans.
Yeah, you never know.
But we all take on our own identities as various other species outside of humanity.
Okay. But it is the vortex, after all.
Exactly.
Yeah, but I do that in life. I am a monkey all the time, for real.
And
so I got you.
And I'm kind of an alley cat all the time, too. Yeah. Like, I think I was the first person who like kind of chose the animal. It's like, yo, that's what you are. Yeah, you're not changing that. So I'm kind of the theater troupe's historian and archivist, and I take care of the scripts, and I know all the information that of the history of the world. Yeah, and I feel very willing, and I think I should do more of it. explain the history of the world that they don't really have time for me a lot of the times, and I just kind of have to be like, okay, well, that's fine. So I have information if you want to listen.
Okay.
I know the original Broadway cast album of Mystery of Edwin Drood, which
who doesn't
was an ad lib at one point that everyone's just like, oh god, why are you like this?
Eva, tell us about your character.
I am the new girl.
Great series, by the way.
Thanks. Thank you. I choose different names throughout the course of the show. I start out with Sloth, but our leader Trash Panda, who is played by the beautiful and lovely and wonderful Julie Moore, she hates that name and doesn't understand why I choose it. So then that causes me down a path of choosing various names. And I've gone between penguins and yesterday Loch Ness Monster. So
lovely. And I mean, is that something that that is organic and could change every night?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. 100%. I love that. Well, you guys are prepared to show us a little bit, are you not?
Yeah. So in this scene, the new girl has shuffled all the way around the camp and been rejected by various people, and is worried about her place in troop. And so she's right now helping Tlacuache and Alley Cat with costumes and seeking their advice.
Okay, great. So this is Eva McQuaid, Trey Deason, and Ben Bazan doing a scene from the Vortex's production of Last, an Extinction Comedy.
Trash Panda hates me, and she's going to make me leave, and she hates all of the names that I've chosen, and I don't even know what a Panera is, let alone many Paneras that would necessitate the use of a Panera.
Why are you so obsessed with Panera? It's just one word in the script. And no one knows what it means. It's an ancient, archaic term. No one knows what a Panera is.
Look, and Trash Panda's not going to kick you out. You're part of the family now.
Yeah, she doesn't hate you. She doesn't hate you. She's irritated by you.
You know, and lots of families thrive on irritation.
Okay? That's true. That's what being a family is. It's being irritated by each other. And that's
So, and like Alley Cat mentioned, you know, it's a word that it's 400 years old. These sketches are 400
They're
years
ancient
old.
Text.
So, you know, my word, the word that I messed up was espresso. I always thought it was expresso, and Trash Panda finally corrected me.
Yeah, like only douchebags say espresso.
Yeah. I had to learn the hard way.
Do you know what espresso is?
I do know.
Yes, we'll teach you.
I'm learning
That's
so much.
That's what it's about. That's
you, you've been such a great help, New Girl. I mean, you've been helping out with all these costumes. I really appreciate how careful you are with them.
You're getting so much better.
Thanks, because I've been failing pretty hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, you
And
have.
I don't want to leave, because I like you all, most of you at least. The Lakwacha. Alley Cat coming around to you. But I just feel like this is different, and I don't want this to end up like it has in the past for me.
Well, all you got to do is make sure you suggest a better name. All right?
Yes.
The name is how we survive.
Sloth was pretty good.
The names could be better.
They could be a lot better.
I'm just saying they could be better. Look, here's the thing. This is a troupe that's dedicated to extinction-based sketches.
Yep.
And we choose our names based on the species
yes.
that we most identify. It could be a plant.
Yes.
It could be a mammal. We're mammals.
Yes.
You know, it could be
Aren't
a
you
germ.
A marsupial?
Yes, but I'm still a mammal.
Okay.
Yeah, marsupials are mammals.
And that is a plot point
so
we will carry throughout this show.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yes.
Yes, I think we'll probably drop it after
well,
this scene.
I don't know any kind of animal, marsupial or otherwise, that has been able to survive purely by accident, which is how I have managed to survive.
Wait, expand upon that. What do you mean? Yeah.
Okay,
accident?
So maybe I'll leave to go and forage for food or, you know, find a place to go and do some stuff, and then I come back, okay. and like everybody's just dead or gone.
Ooh. It's probably that they're
mostly
all dead.
They're probably dead.
Yeah, mostly dead.
They're probably
I just didn't
want to
say
animals.
That because I like you, well, the Lock Watcher.
Yeah, that's not and good information I, to have now. I'm a little nervous about our future.
Oh, well,
you.
You know, I've been nervous about our future for the last 25 years, Alley
that's
Cat.
That's fair. Yeah, we could all die.
All right, you guys, it's time for the next sketch. All right, you got to go change. All right, you got to cover the transition.
Oh, yes,
And
yes.
What is that bikini that you have there?
Oh, boss, I think we should use this for dinosaurs on
no,
the...
No, don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it.
It's such a great sketch, though.
No, get it out of your mouth. All right, that was me stepping in for Julie Moore awesome. At the end in this scene. Which
Very
was
good. Well, that's a lot of fun, I must say. Y'all must have a lot of fun doing it.
And it'll be completely different on the night of the show.
It's been like the best Tonight, part of it is just like watching these. It's like watching 10 people who I adore, including Bonnie Cullum making her return to the stage after more than
yes.
20 years.
We talked to Bonnie a little bit about that. It's so
exciting.
Is,
just watching them play together is the most fun thing about the whole thing. And so that's what we're trying to do every night.
That is awesome. It looks like a lot of fun. So when do you guys open?
We open this Friday.
Friday. That's
Friday,
like in just
Friday,
a couple of
Friday.
Days. And how long do y'all play? When do you close?
We close April 27th.
Great. And where can folks go to get more information?
Vortexrep.org.
Right. And I just do want to stress, you said it. I just want to stress it. Bonnie Cullum back up on stage. That's, to me, that's worth going just to see Bonnie on stage. How thrilling that must be.
She is wonderful.
Well, you're the reason I asked her. I said, how did you finally decide after all these years to get on stage? And she said, Rudy Ramirez. He convinced
go.
Me to do it. How do you say no?
Did you indeed convince her to do it?
We certainly talked about it. I was like, you know, we wanted this to be like, you know, a really good Vortex project, you know, that really reflects us because it's a lot of the priorities that we have. We've always been an environmentalist theater. So I'm really glad she's there.
Her eyes lit. I was like, whoa, you light up talking about it. This is exciting. So excited me.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you guys for coming back onto Offstage and on the Air. And I'm looking forward to seeing this one. This looks like a lot of fun.
Yee-hoo.
Thank you.
Merci.
Thank you.
De nada. That was Rudy Ramirez, Evan McQuaid, Trey Deason, and Ben Bazan of Vortex and their show Last, an extinction comedy playing at the Vortex March 29th through April 27th. For more information, vortexrep.org. And let's rock it out for the end of time.
In the end of time.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello!
And Rebecca Melanson. And we'll just pretend she's saying hello. So let's just talk about some local stuff. Do you have anything particular you want to talk about so I don't steal your thunder?
I do. It's actually the last weekend of Notes from the Field, which is just such a really
I did not get to see,
awesome
and I really
piece.
Want to.
you want to go this weekend, you let me know. It's Anna Deavere Smith's newest work on the prison to pipeline system. She interviewed over 250 folks. It's so powerful. It's so awesome. And it's playing at Zach Theater through this Sunday. For more information, zachtheater.org.
Awesome. And while we're talking about big behemoth organizations doing shows that seem interesting, Ballet Austin is doing an original piece around, it's called Grimm Tales. It's around Grimm's. And there's been an upswing yet again of fairy tales.
It's a world
premiere.
Fractured
fairy tales.
So excited about this ballet.
It only plays for three nights.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Wow. And it is...
That's normal with the ballet.
Stephen Mills... choreographed it. It plays Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, March 29th, 30th, and 31st. Friday and Saturday is 8 p.m. Sunday is the at 3 p.m. Graham Reynolds did the music.
Yes.
So this is locally conceived and
local
produced show.
And world premiere. And I have to tell you, their little promo videos of the girl running in the woods all creepy. I'm like, this looks awesome. I've been very, very, very excited about this new twist on the Grimm Tales. I love the Grimm's Tales, so maybe that's part of it.
It's grimy.
It's grimy.
It's grimy. And the last thing I want to talk about is a 1 ounce opera. Opera's taking kind of a little comeback as well, in a little different ways.
It's been a little mainstreamy.
So we had at our theater, Lardo Weeping, which was an opera. Again, Graham Reynolds did the music. No, I'm wrong about that. Never mind. That wasn't Graham Reynolds. He came to the show.
Oh.
I guess that counts.
Well, he supports.
But this is called Fresh Squeezed Ounce of Opera. It's four short operas on March 22nd through 24th at the Museum of Human Achievement. Achievement?
I was like, are we achieving our achievement?
I'm going to achieve.
We're gonna achieve our
Museum
achieve.
Of Human Achievement. I like to call it MOHA. More information, 1OunceOpera.com. I didn't say when.
What a great way to learn about opera if you're really unsure and see four different little pieces of it and immerse yourself.
Yep.
That's smashing, Lisa. What a great pick.
Let's talk about today in theater history, shall
we?
Let's do it.
Today in theater
history. What happened?
Well, we're going to start in the relative near future, which is our near past, which is 1977.
The
70s. Oh, my God. a show called Cold Storage opened up. It starred Martin Balsam and Paul Sprayer. It's about cancer patients finding different ways to accept their fates.
Harsh title, man.
Yeah, written by Ronald Ribbon. And I chose to talk about this because it played at the American Place Theater. And I don't... American Place Theater, by the way, where Elephant Man premiered before it went on Broadway. I don't know if American Place Theater exists anymore.
I was just over here thinking, does it exist anymore or does it have a new name? You know what, Lisa?
It was on the
will find out.
It was on the east side, and it was in the Citibank building, actually.
Yeah, I will find out.
Will let you know. 1978, Bob Fosse's Dancin' opened on Broadway at the Broadhurst.
Love the Fosse.
It won a Tony Award, and you can go on and see their Tony performance. They're doing to Sing Sing Sing, dancing to Sing Sing Sing.
You know, we're only like a week away from the FX series premiering.
I know, Fosse Bergen.
Drum roll!
It played for 1,774 performances. 1988, Joan Turner's Come and Gone opens at the Ethel Barrymore and starred Angela Bassett. Angela Bassett and Delroy Lindo.
I'll call Angela and let her know to change the name.
August Wilson play about, he does everything about Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania, and is about a family in Pittsburgh. State Fair opened in 1996, and it wasn't a show before it was a movie.
Yes.
So that's another one of those that I didn't realize. So it actually opened in 1996 for the first time. It starred John Davidson and Catherine Crosby, Andrew McArdle, and Donna McKechnie.
That's a crazy blast of the 70s all back on stage. John Davidson, I just can't get That's Incredible out of my head now whenever I see him.
Well, I have whenever I think of John Davidson, he did something where he had to shave his eyebrows and he went on the Johnny Carson show with no eyebrows.
Oh, that's...
And so whenever I hear John Davidson, I think of him with no eyebrows.
I think of him in That's Incredible. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. That was the last show that was produced by David Merrick.
Interesting.
Yeah. So let's
was
see.
Was it really?
Yep. According to this one, two deaths happened on this day in 2002, Milton Berle and Dudley Moore.
Oh, I miss Dudley, and I've been talking about him a lot. We talked about him on the radio a few weeks ago, too.
I know. I'm just going to run through these really quickly because we're running a little late. 2003, a Broadway adaptation of Urban Cowboy opened. Didn't last. 60 performances. In 2007, or in 2008, the Encores revival musical of Gypsy, starring Patti LuPone and Laura Benanti and Boyd Gaines.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And then in 2011, How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, the one with Daniel Radcliffe opened.
Nick Mayo was in it.
Yep. Birthdays, Gloria Swanson, Steve McQueen, Austin Pendleton, Michael York, Bartlett Scherr, who is going to be represented here in Austin, Texas, with his version of Fiddler coming in 2 weeks, and Quentin Tarantino.
That's a very odd group of folks on a birthday.
Yep, so let's go away with listening to a little bit of How to Succeed, because why not?
Why not?
Well, it's been a long day.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's Nicole.
And Rebecca Malonzo, who's taking a little break and is sitting down, but she's going to come up to the microphone right now
I'm standing. I'm here. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Your dreams were your ticket out.
Thank you, Lisa. No one else ever does that.
They need to make a Broadway musical about that. So here, from Penfold Theaters, I'm very honored because we have the founders of Penfold Theater. We have Nathan Jerkins. Hello.
Hi.
And we have Ryan Crowder.
Hello.
And Ryan Crowder is currently...
He talks like that all the time.
Yeah.
That's true. Nicole understands
I
me.
Do.
Yes.
So y'all are here to talk about... crime and punishment.
And both.
Both
at
the
same
time.
A special deal.
Connections. Yeah.
So y'all are doing a version of Dostoevsky's, I can't pronounce.
No, that nailed
like,
it.
I think you just said it.
Crime and Punishment at the Ground Floor Theater. Tell us about it.
Oh, wow. Okay, looking at me. Well, so Dostoevsky's novel is over 500 pages. I listened to it on audio the other day, and it took over 22 hours. Show is not that.
Take on audio?
Yeah, right. It is actually a 90-minute blitz through the story.
Oh, it's
no
such a sprint through this.
It boils down all of the characters... and only has three actors, and it grabs you from the moment it starts, and it never lets go until it finishes. But I think it does a great job really coming to the heart of what the story is about, which is a person who finds himself without options, makes some terrible choices that basically destroy himself and others, and is now looking for a path to redemption.
Right. So it's no secret. I mean, that the choice, what his choice is. Can you tell people what that is?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So, yes. Spoiler alert from this novel of centuries ago.
If they don't know, they don't know.
It's about an axe murder, right? Yeah. We actually had a friend several years ago, Megan Riley, who was a lighting designer here in town. She's since left, and we miss her. But she sent me an email one day, and she said, "Hey, I think you should look at this. It looks really good." And I was like, "Yeah, because you think of me and axe murders, because that's great." But you know, like classy, highbrow axe murders. Yeah. So
student intellectual axe
murders. Oh, yes. So it really
Listen,
is.
Listen, I like Mr. Bateman, and he's an American Psycho.
There
so,
you go.
You know, it's
right?
Okay.
Everybody loves a classy axe murder. So after all of this time, yes, a character finds himself without any options and ends up, as you do sometimes, happening to axe murder a couple of people, and then trying to figure out, like, not just what has he done literally, but who has he become to do this, and what are the series of justifications of why maybe it was good, or maybe I should have, and it's just this really interesting deconstruction of... the lies we tell ourselves sometimes, mm-hmm, right?
Yeah.
And how we attempt to justify the things that we try to justify, right? So a lot of it cycles around his determination to dehumanize people to such an extent that it doesn't matter what he does to them, right? Yep. He deserves this. And that is... a lie that I think it's always worth talking about more.
And the he we're talking about is played by Ryan Crowder.
Yes.
Yeah, what's the character's name?
Raskolnikov.
Thank you, because I could not pronounce that. And who else? You said it's a three actors in the show. Who else
so
is in it?
So really lucky to be sharing the stage with Ben Wolf and Chelsea Manasseri.
Yeah, they're okay. Those are some...
They're okay.
Pretty snazzy folks.
And, you know, the novel is laid out in chronological order, so you just kind of start at the beginning and walk with the character through the whole process. The play is not like that. It is through the lens of his fractured mind. And so it starts with him in the police station talking to Inspector Porfiri, played by Ben Wolf, and then as the interrogation goes on, he kind of slips back into memories, thinking backward and forward in time, and so we're all over the place in the timeline, and Chelsea and Ben are also playing a number of different characters,
right.
So they're moving in and out as different people, and so it's real fast in that way.
And you're going to give us a little taste of it, are you not?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Can you want to...
I wish you...
You don't have to.
No.
Yes, please.
I wish you had the video cam going right there so we caught a little...
You're like, right.
Yeah.
That's some,
really?
That's some pretty classy eyebrow acting there. I liked that.
That's right. Nathan's going to narrate my eyebrow acting as we go.
Story of my life.
most of the... play happens within the fourth wall, but there is one moment where Raskolnikov breaks it and talks to the audience.
Wonderful.
And so that's this moment.
Great. Well, this is Ryan Crowder doing a scene from Penfold Theater's production of Crime and Punishment.
Listen, I want to ask you a serious question. On the one hand, we have a stupid, senseless, worthless, spiteful, sick, horrible old woman who is not simply useless, but actually doing harm, who has no idea she is living only for herself, and who is going to die soon anyway. Do you understand? Do you? And on the other hand, young people's lives are being thrown away because they don't have enough to eat. Hundreds of thousands of good deeds could be done with the old woman's money, which would just be buried with her in a monastery. Hundreds, thousands even could be set on the right path. Dozens of families saved from wickedness, from hardship, from ruin, and all with her money. Kill her, take her money, and with it devote yourself to serving humanity, for living for the good of all mankind. What do you think? Wouldn't one tiny crime be wiped out by 1,000 good deeds? One death and 100 lives in exchange. It's a simple mathematical equation. Well, of course she doesn't deserve to live, but there it is. It's nature's plan, you say. Well, but we have to correct nature and direct nature, don't we? Don't we? Isn't that mankind's greatest gift to the world?
Music interrupts from outside as the street musicians play.
Do you like street musicians? I love them on cold, damp, dark autumn evenings. It has to be damp. When all the passers-by have pale green, sickly faces. Or better still, when the wet snow is falling straight down. When there's no wind, you know what I mean? And the street lamps shine through it. God grants peace to the dead. I read recently that a man condemned to death thinks about an hour before he dies that anything he has to do to stay alive would be better than death. If he has to live on some high rock, on a ledge so narrow he could only ever stand, and if that little ledge were surrounded by a rolling ocean and everlasting tempest swirling around him, if he had to live plunged in everlasting darkness, in everlasting solitude, if he had to remain standing on a square yard of space for 1,000 years for the rest of eternity, it would be better to live like that than to die in the next hour, just to live life, however horrible it may be. Mankind is a disgusting creature.
Oh my!
Oh,
wow!
Oh yeah!
So we are plumb running out of time.
Yeah, sure.
But I should say that that the sound design by Lowell Bartholomew really envelops the audience in this,
please.
And you really everybody gets really enthralled in it. So you're open now, correct? When do you close?
We opened last week, and we run all the way through Saturday, April 6th.
Okay. And for more information, where can folks go?
PenfoldTheater.org.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much
for
coming in.
Thank you for being on.
Thank you, ladies.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was Ryan Crowder and Nathan Jerkins of Penfold Theaters. production of Crime and Punishment at Ground Floor Theater through April 6th. For more information, groundfloortheater.org. And I'm not going to play music because we're running out of time, so I'm just going to say goodbye.
La, 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 la.
So if you're listening on the terrestrial radio, you'll hear Austin Monitor News next. If you're listening on the podcast, and I don't know why you aren't, you'll hear Backstage at Offstage, where we'll learn a little bit more about our guests versus the shows they're doing. How can they get our podcast?
You just go to offstageonair.com. There's a little box there on the right. Enter your email. You hit enter, and guess what? Voila! We arrive weekly. You don't have to look for us. We find you.
We do. We're going to go out with a little bit of Sasha Pierre and Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
Just say the Grobes.
And it's the Grobes. I was going to be playing both. I was going to play Dust and Ashes after I spoke to you guys because it seemed apropos. But the song that both Nicole and I really love is Letters, and that's what we're going to go out with.
Because you know why? In 19th century Russia, we write letters.
In 19th century Russia, we write letters, we write letters. We put down in writing what is happening in our minds. Once it's on the paper, we feel
the curtain has come down on Hades the Musical. Hadestown, the musical. Anyway, but we're backstage. We've left the stage door. We're backstage. We're in the parking lot next to the dumpsters. Trey's looking around. What do you mean? It's like seems like we're in a studio.
He's
to me.
He's waving.
I was looking at where we were.
And joining us here are most of the people that from the FM show. We have Rudy Ramirez.
Hello again.
Trey Deason.
Hi.
Ben Bazan.
Buenas.
Ava McQuaid.
Bonjour.
Bonjour. And Ryan Crowder.
Howdy.
Howdy. Well, most of you have been backstage, haven't you? Have you been backstage, Trey?
I've not been on this part.
Yeah, this is backstage. Yeah, so remember? No. We had the whole thing about being by the dumpsters.
Just wanted, yeah. That's why I was looking around. I'm fascinated.
Well, I have not either.
Yeah, well, I know, because you haven't been on the show before. Yeah. So, but Trey, tell me where you're from. How did you find your way into this wonderful world of theater? Where you seem to know so much.
Jeez.
Don't ask me questions. Wow. That's not why I'm here.
Questions. I'm just here to listen.
I'm speechless.
I come from Brownwood, Texas, which is about 2 hours away from here. It's a population of about 20,000.
It's not Brownsville.
People.
It's no, Brownwood.
Not Brownsville. Brownwood. It's a little smaller than Brownsville. Okay.
In what direction?
It's surrounded by nothing. Northwest.
Okay.
It's kind of diagonally.
Uh-huh.
Down 183.
Okay.
And I just got into musicals. Movie musicals I watched a lot as a kid since I was around two or three.
Do you have a favorite? Or one that, like, that one that sparked you? Sounds nasty.
Well, the first musical I really remember really getting into is Guys and Dolls. The film version first, and then there was a local production that I went and saw, and there is, I don't know if it still exists, it may have deteriorated, but there is a cassette somewhere where I played all of the parts in Guys and Dolls.
You must get that. Now, did you do Fugue for the Tin Horns, and you played each role?
That was tricky, but yeah, I did that.
It was without overdubbing?
No, I didn't have that.
He
technology.
Did it on a cassette tape. Oh. He wasn't overdubbing.
You must find that tape.
I think it was a little pre-puberty, so Adelaide's Lament was, I think, funny. Around the right key.
You must find that.
Produce it, too. Trey, I even have a boombox we can play it on.
Oh, man.
No, we can play it right here on the...
We can right here.
My mom did find it, and she really loved it.
So when did you first start doing performing, either musicals or non-musicals?
When I was a kid, I auditioned for Shadowlands at the local college for the child, for the little boy role.
Mm-hmm. The LBR.
Didn't get it, but so I got a callback, so that was kind of fun. And then high school, I auditioned for, you had to audition for the theater group in high school, and didn't get that. And then sophomore year, I said, I didn't get that, so I'll audition for the musical, which is open to everyone. And I got to be in the Pajama Game.
Did they pay you 7.5 cents?
Wow. I not even that much.
doesn't
seem like a hell of a lot.
No, yeah. I know.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Doesn't mean a thing. But give it to me every hour. 40 hours every week.
Yeah, I know.
That's enough for me to
not do much, like, really.
Not much, really. Not anymore.
I figured it out.
with a pencil and a paper.
Well, that's cool. So now you are also a playwright, are you not?
Yes.
Why do you laugh?
We're just like, that
was the nerdiest. I was laughing because he and I were like, having a conversation.
Let's just do the entire musical.
The
I know.
Like,
when
is the... It's already begun.
Yeah, started. Yes, I started writing, I think... Well, I wrote a musical libretto in high school that's really not great.
Called? What's it about? Let's hear.
Oh, jeez. It was called SOS Haverstock. And it was loosely based on, it was a 1940s style musical that was loosely based on the behind the scenes filming of Alfred Hitchcock's Foreign Correspondent.
Of course.
Which
I love you so much, Trent.
And how old were you?
I don't know, 15? I was a teenager. Wow.
That is amazing.
That's kind of everything.
And it was like some fictional characters and some characters. And Hunley Haverstock is the name of the actual character in Foreign Correspondent. But anyway, and I started writing plays in college.
Amazing. I'm going to have to, we're going to actually show how the sausage is being made right here backstage. Eva, I'm going to ask you to hide that food because it's not allowed in here. Just hide it so nobody sees it.
Yeah, don't put it in front of
But
the
hopefully they don't
window.
Listen to this, which they will. They're going to come after you.
She was going to give it to me anyway, so.
So, Eva, you're from San Antonio.
That is a true story.
We know that. Mm-hmm. So when did you start in theater?
Second grade. I was in a Valentine's Day program. I was in a Coke bottle choir.
Coke bottle choir.
We had to play Love Me Tender.
On Coke bottles?
Coke bottles.
So like blowing over the top of it?
Mm-hmm. I thought when you said Coke bottle choir, you guys were all like kids singing. Yeah. I like to teach the world to sing. Sing with me.
Big harmony.
Nope.
But that would have been beautiful too.
Yeah, but you actually played that on the Coke bottles. That's what's cool.
Yeah, I mean it was no HS Haverstock, but I'm
SOS.
SOS, excuse me. My apologies.
You're thinking of the Gilbert and Sullivan version.
Oh, my apologies. Right, that is correct.
Apology accepted.
Yep. And then I was in a bunch of stuff, you know, in middle school. I was in choir, dance. I played basketball while I was the same height as most of the other people now.
Oh, you were. Okay, because I was about to say from a height standpoint, you know, the radio can't appreciate.
Very vertically challenged.
Yeah.
Yeah, not.
Vertically modest.
But there are vertically modest people that play basketball. Yeah.
There are. Most of them are about a foot taller than I am.
I was like, none of them are our height weight, but I like that you think that.
That's very nice. That's generous of you. And then in high school, did more theater. I had a great theater teacher, and thank you. And was in band and all that kind of nerdy stuff. And then in college, did some stuff in college, and then graduated from college and felt like I was supposed to be a grown-up. So I became a journalist, and I was a reporter in San Antonio. And a friend of mine.
What medium?
Newspaper.
Cool.
I loved it.
Did you wear a little hat with a piece of paper in it?
A piece of paper that said press.
Yep.
That I did myself.
Awesome.
And then later my mom embroidered one for me. She felt bad that I didn't have a real one.
What?
So my mom. And then, I carried my own little microphone. It wasn't real or anything, but it did the job.
It's good.
It was a prop, you know. Actors need props all the time. So and a friend of mine opened a theater in San Antonio called the Overtime Theater. And he was doing a show and said, why aren't you doing any theater anymore? And I said, this is what you're supposed to do, aren't you? And he said, you know, adults are, I mean, who do you think you see up there, like in the movies, and who's doing Broadway shows? What's wrong with you? And I said, I guess that's true. I never thought about that. So I went back and I did a play called Flinch Gordon.
Of course.
And the Attack of the Planticons. It was magnificent.
Of course.
And from there, I started doing stuff again. I did Annie Get Your Gun. I started auditioning, and then I joined an improv troupe in San Antonio.
What was the name of the improv troupe?
It was called Next Stage Improv.
Oh, okay, that's not very original. I'm teasing.
I'm so sorry we didn't have you
in
the time of
improv names.
I apologize.
You should.
I'm so sorry that we didn't have you there to. I
could do no better. Let's just be clear.
Had we gone out to the public and asked for their input, we should have, I guess. But they are still working hard at the overtime.
Awesome.
100%. They are, you know, I love that theater. I love San Antonio.
And that theater still exists and still working.
Yes, they've
moved. Is your friend
locations.
Still running it?
No, he's gone to Chicago, I think.
I've heard of that place.
Yeah. And it's a place, I guess, where they have accordion music.
Specifically Polish.
Specifically Polish, yeah. Yes, thank you, Ben.
Yeah.
They have really good pierogies, too.
And that is also a Polish thing.
Yeah. It is indeed.
So, and then I just decided to move to Austin because there was so many more opportunities here. I was actually really just a challenge to myself also to see if I could do something in a bigger city. And also, nobody would cast me in Hairspray in San Antonio, so I thought I would try to expand my reach.
Oh, that's funny.
That still has not happened.
I was about to say, did you get to do Hairspray here? Not a lot of people do it. It was done at Zilker once, but
Zach
I've not.
Zach did it a couple years ago.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say Zach and Zilker, I think, are the only two I've seen around here.
So, does everybody here do musicals?
A musical. A musical.
Yeah, say yes.
I don't enjoy doing them.
You
so
don't?
Because they're hard.
They are indeed.
I do
hard.
Like doing them, but they're hard.
They
so
are indeed.
Yeah, but they're kind of everything.
So I just, they are. I'm just obsessed with them.
Ben, what's your story?
I'm originally from Deep South Texas, from a small town called La Casita, Garciasville. I started theater when I was in, I feel like in second grade, my dad became the...
Y'all are second grade siblings.
My dad became the high school theater teacher when I was in second grade. So from that moment on, I would just go to his rehearsals anytime they'd be rehearsing for one-act play competition.
Did your father have a theater background?
Yes. Okay. So he went to college a little bit later in his life. But yeah, he went to college for theater and got a minor in English and then became the theater teacher. And so he was my theater teacher in high school, which I thought was super, super fun.
Did you? I don't know if I would have liked that.
So it was fun. Now that looking back on it, it was fun just because, you know, it allowed me to try and take on that role of trying to help out. But it did cause a lot of tension sometimes.
Yeah, it would either help or hinder you getting roles. And whichever happened was bad.
Yeah, pretty much. but it definitely was fun. And so after high school.
It's got to be something that you love and your father love that you're bonding on. So there's got to be this closeness to it besides the.
I mean, it was fun because, I mean, I would go to practice for basketball early on in the day. And then we would stay through rehearsal at night, so that time that we would spend going to and from school was fun because it would be 20 minutes of just listening to like old school like 70s songs and just talking about, you know, our experience with not having everyone on the same page and only having a small group of people, but it definitely allowed us to have like this kind of like a good connection, but on top of that, there was also some tension.
Sure. And so, did you go to college for theater?
Yes. So I made the choice to come to UT because my sister was here already, and also I was very naive in my thinking. I was like, "Oh, the state competition for the one act play is in Austin, so why not go to school at UT?"
Sure.
And so, yeah, I was in the theater and dance department from 2008 to 2012.
Great.
I got to meet a bunch of different people, which I wasn't used to because, you know, I came from a place where it was 99% Latino. So UT was a whole different experience. You know, I stopped speaking Spanish so I could assimilate and, you know, sound
did you have
like
to
how
do
I
that?
Sound.
Huh? Because you have to do that. Because
you have to do that, right? I wasn't getting a cast with an accent. Now I can get cast with an accent. But no, so...
I would put you in Hamilton.
Yeah, thank you. but yeah, so through schooling, I met a bunch of different people that were head of organizations at the Paramount and at Zach, and I started doing a bunch of teaching artist work.
Oh, great.
So doing creative outreach and creative writing, and that kind of made me fall back on like, oh, I should speak more Spanish because that's where I'm going to talk to kids and teach kids, so... Why not? And through that, you know, I graduated. I didn't get into Teach for America because, you know, I was like, well, I can move to New York, LA, And then that didn't happen. And I was like, all right, I'm going to apply to Teach for America and go and do the work for 2 years. And then that'll be the reason why I left. And I didn't get it. And so...
Is it that competitive? I'm surprised.
I have no... I mean, I made it to the second round. And then after that, it just didn't work. So I kind of just stayed here and I've been working as a teaching artist. Now I work at a private school where I do the drama curriculum and I'm the athletics director.
Can you share the name of the school?
Acton Academy.
Oh, it's, you know, Acton.
Right around the corner.
I know exactly where it is. Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, and so after I graduated, I started taking improv classes at Coaltown. And
I just want to stop for a minute. Did you hear what he said, Lisa? He does theater and sports.
I heard that.
I am not the only lone person who does theater and
you
sports.
You keep saying that. I think that's an odd thing.
Lisa doesn't want to talk about sports all the time.
I don't
want to
talk about
theater and sports. I'm like, yes, we do.
I love it. I love it. Basketball is so much like improv.
I don't want to talk about sports because I don't enjoy talking about sports.
It's okay. I'm just letting you know, though. I'm not the lone person.
I didn't think you were. So, but I do want to highlight the fact that you started in theater in second grade.
Mm-hmm.
Eva started theater in second grade. You play basketball. She played basketball.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
She's also from, she's also from San Antonio. I'm a huge San Antonio Spurs fan.
You could both be hired in Hamilton.
and then be sued later by
by a sorority girl.
But that would be really a terrible thing for them to do because that would – I'm, you know, also actually mostly Irish.
There you go.
And people don't know that.
Black
so
Irish.
People would just be – suing themselves.
That's not, I am Irish, Italian, Mexican, and Spanish. So we are the Irish Latina combo.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
The Leprechaunas.
That's a scary combination.
That's a lot.
I know. It's
the Leprechaunas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what my gang is called.
It's the Leprechaunas. I have their last album.
You're the one who purchased it. God bless you.
There you go. Ryan, what's your story? I'm sorry, but I cannot hire you in Hamilton.
Oh, man, I feel so persecuted.
You could, King George.
Yeah,
I know. You could play King George.
Come on.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Yeah.
Which I have to tell you.
White people. Come on.
I have to tell you, that's got to be a fun
argument.
Role to play.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a dumb argument.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It really is.
They hire white people.
They do. They do. They actually, and I didn't think that they had white people in the chorus, but they do.
Yeah, yep. I was like, there are.
I thought the only white, the only non-person of color was King George, but they do have chorus members
they're
that are
trickled
white.
In between.
So Ryan, what's the story? What's happening? What's your secret?
My secret.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I've been waiting to this moment to let it out.
Good. We have hard hitting journalism here. That's why I'm wearing this hat with the press.
The one with the paper in the
thing? Yeah, my grandmother made it for me. It
matches your embroidered one right there, let's see, what's happening right now? Well, we have a show, obviously. That's
Crime and Punishment.
I thought you were telling us a secret.
Everyone knows this.
So we know, here's the thing. We've talked about this on the show several times. But both you and Nathan, and countless numbers of other people that have come through these hallowed doors, all went to Abilene Christian
that's
University.
Right.
Yes, that's
it's
true.
A large group of you.
And here in Austin.
The mafia is spreading.
Which I think
is the Abilene Christian University mafia.
Which I think is amazing. I actually spoke to somebody recently who didn't go to Abilene Christian University. They went to something else Christian University.
Okay.
But similar tones were struck, as in it was a small school, the theater department was small, so therefore we got a well-rounded education.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I've both heard from both you, Nathan, and other people that have gone to Abilene Christian School.
Yeah.
What is it in the water up there? And most of you are pretty good.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. I know. I wonder now if I would get into the program that I was in, because they've really grown in some wonderful ways.
I said you were pretty good.
Well, thanks. Yeah. it is, and there are other universities around here. I think of St. Edward's that has kind of a smaller, you know, student body that.
Well, but their theater department is pretty big.
Is it?
And extensive, yes.
Okay.
It is.
Yeah.
How about complex? I wouldn't say it is. It's super huge.
I'm gonna
like
guess
other
it's,
departments.
I'm gonna guess it's
complex.
Big compared to Abilene Christian.
We had
College.
A capped major at 60 people. So there were 12 in each class at any given time. And the faculty was relatively small, and so you couldn't function unless everybody did everything because there just weren't enough hands. And so we all built sets, and we all sewed costumes.
It's a way to learn, man.
Yeah, it was a great kind of boot camp.
And many of you found your way to Austin. I guess in terms of Texas, that makes a lot of sense. But did you also have people going off to New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, when I was there, the focus was more on non-musical performing. And since then, it has tilted toward musical performing. So we have a lot of people going on tours and to New York and things like that. We've got someone who is Pumbaa on Broadway. We've got someone who is... what's his name? Wolverine, who's about to do...
Hugh Jackman?
Hugh Jackman. She is a part of his troupe when he does it, takes his one-man show out.
I will be there June 19th. I have the VIP right next to the Passerelle
when he
rolls by in his little gold lame pants at the Toyota Center in Houston, kicking off the American version of Hugh Does Broadway.
Yeah, excellent.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Do you do musicals yourself?
I do. I haven't done a full musical in a while, but my last role in undergrad was Godspell. I played Jesus in Godspell.
Oh, yeah. That's, I would say you do musicals then.
Yeah. So that was fun. And then Nathan and I, we do, I'll do a little shout out to this. So we do a little cabaret every year.
Yes, it's coming up.
Is it coming up?
It's coming up May 5th.
Do y'all perform?
We do.
I bought tickets one year, but then didn't go.
Oh, no.
Well, you donated to the theater still.
No, you got the money.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, but I would have loved to have
had you
there.
That's why I was trying to look at it from a sunny side, still like, well, you know, they still got your money.
No, I didn't go. I really wanted to.
Yeah.
So is that ticket still good? Can I transfer to this year?
Yeah, no expiration date on that. You just show up. That'd be great.
Yeah, so that's called A Marvelous Party.
A Marvelous
Do
Party.
Do a quick, we don't have the same rules here on Backstage at Offstage. Where
Command
is it? When is it? How much is it?
You must come. It is Sunday, May 5th. It is up in Round Rock at the Lone Oak Barn, which is a wedding venue. It's gorgeous.
A WV.
And it's also larger. So the past 8 years, we've been at Kindred Oaks, which is another wedding venue. And we outgrew it. So now we're at this new, bigger place, and we're taking that as an opportunity to really rethink the whole
thing.
That's
called good cabaret problems.
Yeah, it really
GCPs.
I was waiting. Thank you, Lisa.
So Nathan and I will MC. There'll be a lot of music. The focus this year is on Tony Award-winning musicals through the decades, and so it'll be a kind of overview.
Cool. Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And people can get information at your website.
PenfoldTheater.org.
They won't be performing Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
No, I would hope not.
That's like a liability nightmare waiting
and
to happen.
Rudy, do you love me?
Rudy.
I love you so much.
So, I was really happy that you came on the show and you were directing this piece because it seems a little different for you.
Oh, very.
And I love that.
Yeah.
So I've always, and not that this isn't, it probably is very cerebral, but when I think of Rudy Ramirez, I think of cerebral pieces that really, what's the word? Overtly change you, and this seems a little bit more fun than that. So, tell us about how you feel about doing that personally. I don't care about the show so much, but I want to know how you feel about it.
I mean, I actually what I try to do is I try to say I'm going to do something different every show. I never want them to be the exact same thing right after the other. And it's rare that I get to do a really fun comedy. Like Agent Andromeda was the last one that was spectacle and lots of humor and things like that. And this one, the fact that this is the first time I've ever done a show where I'm there is not a script for a lot of the scenes and we're changing it as we go along is scary. It is one of the scariest things I've ever done. But it's also just kind of thrilling because it is this fact that it's a different thing so many times. And I think particularly with this issue of extinction, I think it's easy to feel despair in the face of it. And so I was just what about comedy as a way to talk about this and still feel I can actually live my life afterwards and have the energy to change things.
Yeah. So do you ever think about doing stuff that is more, and I hesitate to use the word mainstream, but Neil Simon or My Fair Lady or something that's...
You can just say The classics.
Yeah. You ever think about doing the classics?
I mean, like, there's so many classic shows that I feel like if someone was like, hey, do you want to do this? I'd be like, oh my God, yes. Like, I've got, it's funny, like, when I saw the revival of Once This Island, I was both, like, thrilled and enraged because I was like, this is what I would want to do with it. And now if I do it, people think I copied.
You stole it.
But it's like, I swear to God, I was thinking about this before. I've talked with some theater companies that are in the room right now about doing things, and we're figuring it out. We're hopefully going to be doing something next year.
Do you want to see American Psycho? Yeah,
anything you guys wanted to discuss on the air about what you're thinking about doing?
Well, I
only know of two theater companies in the room, and I know one of them isn't.
It is definitely going to be one of the classics, one of the Renaissance classics.
Oh, awesome.
But like, also just like, I mean, I'm like, I've got. It's, if there's anyone out there who wants like interesting takes on A Little Night Music and a few other musicals, I've got them in the back of my pocket. Anytime you want them, just hire me.
So, what's your wish list? I mean, is it Little Night Music in terms of musicals? What would your
I mean, one of the biggest ones is Natasha Pierre, which I'd want to do fully immersive. I literally love that show a lot. And I think that like I still would love to do Once This Island at one point and. You know, figure out like the various problems of that script because they're there. But like I've also got Little Night Music as well as something that I'm like, I've got a really good idea for it. And I've got a good idea for Sweeney Todd, but Sondheim probably wouldn't approve of it. Because he's apparently like really, there's a whole Tawny Pinkin story that I heard when she visited UT that's very, very juicy, in my opinion, about Sondheim's take on his own work.
Right.
But also, I mean, like, I'd love to do The Lion in Winter. I'd love to do Antony and Cleopatra. Like, I've got a lot of ideas for things. It's just where I've found the most energy and heat and sort of, like, license to do the things that I want to do is in new play work. And so that's where I really that's always my first choice.
And new play work is so much more. I think it's a lot of fun. Although it's really it's fun to take a classic or something and find a new twist of a different way to show it. So if you weren't doing theater, what would you do? What other passions have you out there?
Having tried it, I would languish.
Languish meaning do nothing and enjoy it. Just
and
be a
wither.
Sloth.
Like, yeah, I mean, okay. It's just like, it's such a, for two and a half years, I didn't do any theater when I was pursuing an English PhD in the Bay Area. And as time went on, I was just like, why am I sad all the time? You know? I felt like, as I said, I felt like a piece of paper that had been erased to the point where it was about to tear. Uh-huh. And so I left grad school and I came back to Austin and these friends of mine, like this was, I worked with like anarchists on like random experimental anarchist pieces. And they were like, we want to do this thing. It's about Emma Goldman. Can you come and like work on it with us? And I said, absolutely. And like within a week, my mom had dinner with me. And she said, I feel like I haven't seen you in 2 years, and this is you. And you are, and like, you've been so hard to be around for 2 years, and you're back. And she's like, whatever you're doing now. And it's like, I'm directing. It's just, this is when I'm most me. So I feel like this is it. This is who I am.
Great. Well, that's good. That's a good way to end it all. So that's awesome. We're glad you're doing it. We're glad you found your way back here, not being an English major. And I'm glad you're not a piece of paper about to tear through.
Indeed.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us backstage.
Thank you.
Really
you so
enjoyed
much.
Having you guys. So we'll see you later.
Alligator.
Bye.
Natalie, 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 I must love you or die. Natalie, 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 if you love me, say yes, and I will come and steal you away, steal you out of the dark.